It's Saturday, the 16th of April, 2016. Happy birthday to Luol Deng, Boris Dia, Reggie Jackson, and Matt Smith. And welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by Loot Crate and Tango Juliet Echo. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Tango Juliet Echo and sponsor the podcast for a day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor, which I hope you would do. And thank you to everyone who has done that so far this season. The help you have provided to the podcast has been tremendous, and I do really appreciate it. So thank you to everyone who has done that. Of course, Loot Crate is sponsoring today's podcast, and they've been a great supporter of the show over the second half of this season as well. We don't have any games to review. We don't have any monstrous lines of the night to talk about, but we've got some other interesting stuff today. We're going to be previewing the four games in the first day of the NBA playoffs for Saturday's action. We're also going to be talking to one of the winners of one of the Red Rock Listener Leagues, and that is Joe Buck. Before we get into talking to Joe and talking about the games from for Saturday, Michael Bolton, where are you?
Let's get to it. To it.
Thanks. That makes me feel a lot better. Joe, are you there? You might need to unmute your microphone because I muted you before in case you decided to jump in during the show. Here, Joe, welcome.
Hey, it's good to be here.
So Joe was the victor of the Red Rock Listener League, the Stacey Augman division, and that was the league that myself and Matt Smith were both in, and Joe came out victorious there. So first of all, congratulations, Joe, on a big victory.
Thanks. A lot of fun.
It was a good league. I struggled in it a fair bit. Matt also struggled. We both just missed the playoffs. I think Matt finished 7th and I finished maybe 8th or 9th, just outside the playoffs. Came down to the last couple of days. We didn't get in there. Now, how did you find the league? Did you find it? Were you comfortably in front most of the season? Did you find it was easy? You were just schooling all of us all year, or did you find it the competition was tough?
I found it was pretty tough on the whole season. I believe I did pretty well. I think I was in first for a good run of it. But a lot of close matchups and a lot of lucky Sundays. I feel like I went into a lot of Sundays 4-4 and came out 6-2. So some good bounces.
So look, you had you were first for most of the season, but your record was 76-50 throughout the regular season, which is good, but it's not sort of a dominant, say 85 or 86 that some teams will win. So that gives you the idea that you were winning, but you weren't winning, you know, 8-0s and 7-1s most weeks. It was just a consistent way, and look, I think that's the best way to be in fantasy. That's the way that I like to be. I very rarely will go through the season as the number one team in the regular season, and if I do, or if I'm up there, it's not that I'm absolutely dominating, because I'm not getting 8-0s, because I'm generally punting a category or two. Now, did you go into the draft with a punt strategy in mind?
Once I had my first two picks, I got Chris Paul, I think pick 8. Right after you took DeMarcus, and that kind of bummed me out. I was hoping to get him. But after I went Chris Paul, Klay Thompson, I felt like I had some really good efficiency numbers. And so I went straight away into just punting blocks and rebounds. And you're spot on, because most of my wins, I would either win 5-3 or 6-2. Like, I just was rubbish in blocks or rebounds, and I was fine with that.
Yeah, and look, that's obviously the theory that I've subscribed to, is that you get through 5-3, 6-2 each week, you'll finish, even if you finish second or third, it doesn't matter, but it's going to make you tough to get past in the playoffs, and that's sort of the way it rolled for you, Joe. Now, there's obviously other ways to go about things. People go with a non-punt and balance strategy, and sometimes that can work as well, but I'm with you in that sort of build. Now, you had pick 6, I had pick 4, so I took Cousins at 4, Ed Isaacson took Westbrook at 5. When you had pick 6, Kevin Durant was still sitting on the board. Now, obviously, I was going to say, you probably don't regret picking Chris Paul because you won anyway, but in hindsight, would you have taken KD there?
I think that's a coin flip. I personally like to build around point guards to start. Just it's worked well for me in the past. I don't know. I just kind of had to pick one and went with Chris Paul.
And
I was a little nervous about the injury, too.
Were you worried about Chris Paul's start to the season? Because he didn't start awesomely. He did struggle a fair bit to start the year, but obviously came on ridiculously strong.
That wasn't encouraging. I also had some bad luck. Not bad luck, but I made some trades between the draft and the beginning of the season. and those didn't quite go my way, or things didn't work out as I thought they would.
What sort of deals?
But you know, you stick through it. It's a long season.
Who did you trade before the season started?
I made a trade with Ethan. I sent Kemba Walker and Chris Middleton out to get back Damari Carroll and Chris Bosh. I was trying to really short my center position.
that definitely didn't work in your favor, because I was just about to go through and go, you got Kemba in round 5 and Chris Middleton in round 6, and they both look like great draft picks. But then, that's what happens with trades. But you look at your team, so Paul, Clay as the first two picks, and you've had Mello in round 3. Yeah, he was okay. Pau Gasol in round 4, pretty good value. Kemba, Chris Middleton, Gallinari in round 7. But then the other picks, and this is what happens in all drafts. Dirk in round 8 was probably a real bargain for you, I'd say. D'Angelo Russell, not quite the guy that you want at round 9. Markieff Morris, Darren Collison, Luol Deng, Dennis Schroeder. There's some decent picks there. Deng was horrible to start the season. Ended up being an inspired pick towards the end of the year. But you have to rotate your guys through your roster. And if you look at your roster that ended up winning the league, there's guys on there that obviously you didn't draft. You picked up off a free agency, or you traded for. You got CJ McCollum there. You got PJ Tucker there. Cole Aldrich there. Robin Lopez there. JJ Barea there. Nikola Jokic there. It's all about being active and being aware, I think, of where you need to make changes and when to cut the cord and when to grab guys. Is that the way that you were approaching it?
Oh, absolutely. I had a huge shift going into the semis against Ethan. Again, we had very similar teams, which is why we were able to trade earlier. And in the rounds, in the categories where I thought I was really solid, he was just a little bit better than me at that point in the season. So I shipped about 4 guys out and brought in a bunch of bigs, and I actually won on blocks and rebounds by bringing in Robin Lopez, Cole Aldrich, Nurkic.
Well, that's something that I don't want to get into a punting debate or anything here, but a lot of people who are anti-punting will say, look, you've got no flexibility, but you can have flexibility. Like, I punt turnovers in every single league that I'm in. I won the championship round of a league by 5-4 by winning turnovers, by five turnovers, because, again, punting doesn't mean that you're trying to be actively bad in that category. You're just not caring, but then you can adjust things, and it does happen a lot. And this in the end, I think every team subscribes to some sort of punting strategy, whether you're a non-punt team or not. When you get to the playoffs, you've got to focus on what categories you need to win. And that's the way that it seems to work out in most of the cases. But your team has got a lot of those hot guys on there who had those real hot streaks towards the end. Barea, Jokic, Nurkic, Augustine, Cauley Stein, these guys who really started to come up. And you should be prepared in every draft to turn over 5, 6, 7 players on a roster continually. And not necessarily, unless you've got just a ridiculous team that was out of control good, you're going to have to make those sort of moves. So that's exactly what happened with you, Joe. How did you find the free agency auction bidding system?
Oh, I loved it. The other leagues I play in is kind of the first one to snap someone that gets them. And I'm already lobbying the commissioners to change that. Yeah. I think it's the only way to go.
To me, it definitely is, because, look, not everyone can be in front of their computer or on their phone when an injury happens. Someone goes down, I'm going to pick up his replacement immediately. You can't be there. And it puts an extra layer of strategy into things in terms of how much do I spend? How much money have I got left? How much is this guy going to spend to grab this player? I really love it. And any league that I will have that as the free agency method of picking players, because it is an extra layer of strategy that makes the league extra fun, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Whereabouts are you from in the States, Joe?
Seattle, Washington.
Okay, so yeah, former Sonics fan?
Sorry, I just moved out here recently. I'm originally from Minnesota, okay. A big Timberwolves fan, feeling good about the future.
Well, so you should be. So you're a Timberwolves fan. So did you get to see any Timberwolves games this year?
Oh, yeah, actually, I did. I was home to see my folks around the holidays, and because of the sponsorship on your show, I got some great tickets to Timberwolves Miami Heat off of SeatGeek.
So you got that? You got the $20 rebate as well?
Yeah, I sure did. And they saved me a bunch of money with the value thing. That was a great feature.
So look, we're not just saying this because they were a sponsor of the podcast, but you used it. You used the feature. You got yourself great tickets. You saved a stack of money. SeatGeek, it works. So people, if you go use the promo code REDROCK on SeatGeek, and this is not an ad for SeatGeek because they're not sponsoring today's podcast, but go and use that promo code REDROCK, you're going to save $20. And as Joe said, you get good tickets and you get them cheaper and you get to see, hey, the future NBA MVP in Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, you do. That was a good game for him too.
He's how many games did he have that weren't good games?
Not too many.
What's your thought on the Sam Mitchell not firing the non-pursuing for a permanent role?
What he was doing, you hit it on the head. Like, what he was doing didn't make a lot of sense. It took him forever to put Gorgie in next to Kat. It just wasn't working. I don't know what else to say. And there's a lot of good coaching talent out there right now.
Yep.
So I know they're talking Jeff Van Gundy, Hoiberg. I think it's a time we can make a good change, and we need a change.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, and the Timberwolves were much better down the stretch when they decided to play their best players and play their young core, which is all that anyone could have really asked for. Like, let's play the guys who are going to be the future of the next, or maybe the first great Timberwolves team, some might say. Let's put them together, see how it works. You know, run Jing next to Towns. Don't run Pekovic there. Don't put Garnett there. Yeah, run Bielitsa there. He's a guy who can run. And you know, that threesome of Towns, Bielitsa, and Jing, especially the last couple of weeks, they were working really well together. And I think it's a credit to Sam Mitchell to do that. Now, the offense is still terrible, still horribly run, and someone can come in there and really revamp things. And this team is it's a fair chance to win 40 games next year, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I think a good move towards the end is I think they just stopped taking Tayshaun Prince to the basketball games, which is great because he did not need to play. And every time you railed on that made my heart happy.
Oh, it made zero sense. I could not understand why he was playing as much as he was. But hey, he was. But things got rectified in the end. And in the end, I think it was a maybe successful season. I'd say you'd call it a semi-successful season.
Yeah, no, I think trending in the right direction.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Joe, before you go, I've got a question that came in from one of the listeners to this podcast I thought you might want to help me with here. It comes from Nicola, who's on Twitter at @ThricoSuave_02. Let's hope it's Nicola Mirotic. Anyway, his question is, it's too early to call, but who are your top five fantasy picks for next season? Joe, give me your top five guys.
I mean, there's no way you go past Curry at one. Yep, that's agreed. You got to do that. And then, you know, things get really interesting because depending on what happens in the offseason, you'll get where people ended the season, right? You got Durant and Westbrook right there. But free agency, that could change the landscape. Harden, I'd probably go Curry. If nothing else changes, I'd go Curry, Durant, Harden, Westbrook. And then for the five spot, I want to see Anthony Davis, but with the injury history, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'd take Davis at five. It's Curry and Durant at two. I'll take Harden at three. And then it's between Westbrook, Kawhi, and Davis for four and five. I guess it depends on how you want to build, like what sort of team that you want. Do you have the stomach to take Davis at four? I wouldn't be adverse to doing it, but Westbrook at four is hard to go past. Leonard's in there as well, but to me, especially if I'm in an eight category league, I'm not as excited about taking him over, say, Westbrook or Anthony Davis. And then you've got Chris Paul and LeBron James and DeMarcus Cousins, who, with a new coach in town, he could very easily be a top five player next year. I would be stunned if he wasn't in that conversation as a top five guy next season in Sacramento.
I totally agree. And personally, I'm a big DeMarcus Cousins fan. Really curious to see there, see what happens in the offseason, right? Rondo was on a 1 year.
Yep.
They've made some creative moves in the offseason in the past, some for better, some for worse. So, yeah, his position could shift a lot, I think, on the draft charts based on that.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of stuff that can change in Sacramento. Joe, thank you for coming on the podcast. Thank you for participating in the Red Rock Listener League. And congratulations on your victory. Congratulations on taking myself and Matt down. You'll be in the Champions League next year with everyone else who's been on the show so far, Xavier, Simon, Darren, Joey, myself, and Matt. Looking forward to a big challenge next year.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it, Josh.
No problem. Thank you, Joe, for coming on. What we're going to do now is we're going to look at the games for Saturday's action. We're going to start previewing the action for DFS purposes. Before we do that, today's sponsor is Loot Crate. So why don't you go and look at what Loot Crate's got to offer? You head across to lootcrate.com, but you got to chuck in that slash at the end. It's lootcrate.com/redrock. And that will allow you to tell Loot Crate that you came from listening to this podcast, and you get to check out the wonderful stuff they have there. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and you get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items, and more. Each month, you have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific, which we're getting pretty close to at the moment, to subscribe and you receive that month's crate. When that cutoff happens, the crate's done, it's gone, the exclusive items, you can't get them anymore. This month's stuff, we're looking at a theme of quest. So we're looking at grabbing things from shows such as Harry Potter, Vikings, Uncharted 4, Labyrinth. You get all your special items in there. Exclusive things, t-shirts, pins, figurines, vinyl dolls, all that sort of stuff is over on Loot Crate. So make sure you are checking it out. You make sure you're using the site link, our special URL, which is lootcrate.com/redrock. Plus, we have a coupon code which saves you $3 off any new subscription, and that is redrock as well, which is one word, of course. So lootcrate.com/redrock and use the promo code redrock and get $3 off your crate subscription. Thank you to the guys at Loot Crate who have been good sponsors of the podcast over the last couple of months. Great to have them on board. Okay, let's get into these games. And actually, before we get into them, just a quick shout out to Tom Reed and Benjamin Cadane from the Believe the Hype NBA podcast. I jumped on with them today to do a playoff preview podcast, which has just been released now. So you can check my Twitter timeline to check that out, to listen to myself, Tom, and Benyam talking. If you like one Australian accent, I'm sure you love three of them, so check out our conversation there. You said I've tweeted that out. You can have a look at that and listen to another great NBA podcast with myself, Tom, and Benyam. Let's talk playoffs now. There are four games on tomorrow. You've already gotten myself and Matt's picks for who we think is going to win the series. Let's look at it in a more macro level, I'm not sure what the right term is there. Let's get into it in detail. The first game is the Indiana Pacers and the Toronto Raptors. It's the early game. The Raptors are favored by 6.5. It's an early one for us here in Australia, very, very early in the morning. So everyone that's living in Australia, get some sleep, set your alarm and get up. I think it's about 2 o'clock that it starts tomorrow morning. Get up and watch this one. Let's talk about DFS value. DFS is very interesting in the playoffs. The salaries all get changed around quite a bit because the shortening of rotation, so there's some really weird salaries. And we saw during, I think now, I haven't seen it this year yet, but last season, FanDuel's minimum salary is $3,500. But in the playoffs, they dropped some guys down to $3,000, $2,800 as well to allow some different sort of lineups. But they've changed a lot of guys' salaries quite significantly over on FanDuel, so be aware of that. Let's look at the point guard matchup here. We've got Kyle Lowry and George Hill. Actually, one other thing I got to mention. Remember, in the playoffs, rotations get shortened. So bench guys, if they were getting 24 minutes, they might get 21 minutes. You know, guys who are getting 10 minutes might not play at all. Starters might go from 30 minutes to 36 minutes. You'll see big jumps in people's minutes, and it's going to skew some of the value. So I've done my best to try and set all these minutes and rotations over on Basketball Monster. And again, we are providing DFS projections through the first two rounds of the playoffs. We are providing a much cheaper membership price for playoff projections as well. I think from memory, it's $14.99. You get all the projections for the first two rounds of the playoffs. And of course, yeah, up-to-date changes as they happen. Now let's look at this point guard matchup. George Hill and Kyle Lowry. George Hill had been struggling for most of the season. He's priced at $5,000. That's a $300 rise. It's a terrible matchup for Hill, so I'm not all that interested in using him. Lowry's up at $8,500, so that's a big jump again in his salary. George Hill's been pretty good defensively against point guards too. Lowry definitely hasn't been the same. Let's hope it's because they were resting him with that elbow, trying to get him some maintenance days, as they were quoted as saying. If he is back in business, you know that 40 points is something that he can acquire with not a massive amount of difficulty, but he has been struggling. So I don't mind using Kyle Lowry, but there are better point guards out there if I'm spending over $8,000. On the backup side of things, Corey Joseph is at $3,500. So he's back down to minimum salary. You think that they're going to eliminate DeLon Wright out of the rotation completely in Toronto. Joseph will have to play some at $3,500, and he's not a terrible play at $3,500. I don't 100% love him, but I think he's an okay guy to take a look at. Ty Lawson in Indiana, I don't think there's any trust in him playing any sort of significant role, despite him getting a bit of an extra run down the end of the season, but that was because they were really limiting what George Hill and Monte Ellis were doing once they locked in a playoff spot. At shooting guard, DeMar DeRozan is $8,200. He's averaged 38 points in his last three against the Pacers. At $8,200, I think he's one of the better shooting guard options that are actually playing on Saturday. So I do enjoy him. I think he's got a 40-point upside quite comfortably. Monte Ellis at $6,000 just has really struggled to get anywhere near that really lately, averaging just 22 points across his last five. Not enjoying that. Normie Power's the interesting one. He's at 4,000. He's a pretty decent tournament option. We don't know at this point what Damari Carroll's going to be doing. Is Carroll going to be able to play 20 minutes? Is he going to play 25? Is he going to play 28? Is he going to play 30? Because the more Carroll's minutes rise, the more Powell's minutes decrease. Now, Powell has been fantastic throughout this last stretch of the season. He was the rookie of the month throughout April for the Eastern Conference, which is a massive achievement for a guy that was picked 46th in the draft. Not only is he a scorer, but he can defend well. I really like him at 4,000. So if you're looking for someone cheap at 4,000, now it's going to take... Damari Carroll being limited, but there's a massive chance that Carroll still remains limited. Now, I think that Powell should play over Ross, and he definitely should play over James Johnson, and I'm convinced that he will do that. And I don't think they'll want to run much, although they'll run some Corey Joseph at the two, but I don't think they'll want to run massive amounts when they can put Powell there as well. At $4,000, I think he's a pretty solid investment as a cheaper player in a DFS lineup. Terrence Ross had a massive game in the last time he played, dropped 41 fantasy points, but I'm not interested in him. I just don't think the role will be there. Solomon Hill has also been on fire. He had a 43-pointer the last time the Pacers played when no one else played, and he is averaging 29.5 points across his last five. He's at 4,000, but I think his role takes a significant hit, so not keen there, and Rod Stuckey is not an interesting guy to me. Let's look at the small forwards here. CJ Miles at 3,900. He's a tough one to get my head around. The salary's appealing, but he's more of a GPP guy rather than a cash game guy because he is very up and down. He gets hot and hits shots, then he's going to play more and he's going to put up big numbers, but there's a massive chance that doesn't happen. Paul George at 8,800. His highest score in his last five games has been just 36 points. That's not ideal. I think that he can be better here. He will be better. He'll have to play more minutes, but the Raptors, they're a chance to really create an issue for George at home in Toronto. Not a massive fan of spending up on Paul George here. And Damari Carroll at 5,400, we just don't know what we're going to get out of him at this point. So really almost impossible to use him. The power forwards, Patrick Patterson, he's been really good from an on-court perspective. Statistically, not that great. He doesn't put up many numbers. He's averaging... over his last five games, just 14 points. He's at 3,800. He's a tournament punt. That's really about it. Luis Scola at 38, even more of a punt option. Miles Turner, back to the bench. He's going to be coming off the bench here. Lavoie Allen will be starting over him. Now, Turner will play more minutes, but he's at 5,500. I have zero interest in Miles Turner at 5,500. Same with Lavoie Allen. He's not at 5,500, but I have zero interest in him. The center position, I really do like Jonas Valanciunas here. He's at 6,000, one of the better mid-price centers that's on the board. I think that he should be getting close to 30 minutes a night. He should be a bit of a handful for Jan Mahimi. Mahimi's quite good defensively, but Valanciunas, his offense is pretty spectacular at times. 6,000 for Valanciunas, I do like that as a solid cash game option. Mahimi's at 5,300. Don't mind Mahimi at 5,300. It just feels like it's about $300 or $400 overpriced, so I don't hate it. But, yeah, there's a little bit there. Bismack Biyombo, Jordan Hill. Yeah, I don't think we're really going to see too much of those guys. The next game, the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors. Just was looking at setting the Warriors' rotation and thinking, okay, this is going to be a blowout. So what does Steph do? What does Klay do? What does Draymond do? Last season in the playoffs, Steph played basically 39 minutes every single game. Blowouts, whatever it was. They beat the Pelicans by 15. Steph's playing 39 minutes. So... that gives you an idea of what teams do in the playoffs. There's lots of rest that they get. They get 2 days off between each game. They get, they win in four. They get a week off. So there's not, they're going to play a lot of minutes, and that's appealing for us. Now Steph's price is up to 11,200. It's a massive, massive jump. Does he get 50 points? I reckon you'd have to think that he's going to get close to 50. Patrick Beverley is a little bit of a concern. Just his defense-wise, 11,200 for Steph, it is expensive, and you have to find, I think you'd almost have to use a guy like Normie Powell in there alongside Steph to try and get that room in your salary cap to put him in. And there are other guys out there that I'd probably prefer over Steph, but I definitely don't hate using him at that price, especially because even if they smash the Rockets, I still think he's getting pretty big minutes. I doubt that he's going to be sitting out the final quarter and playing 29 minutes or anything like that. Patrick Beverley at 5,000, I like him too. He's averaging 31 across his last five, 36 across his last three. We know that point guards can play well against the Warriors. he's going to have an opportunity here. It's going to be Beverly, or they're going to run Jason Terry or Andrew Goudlock out there. They're going to have to give Beverly big minutes, 30-plus minutes most nights. So I do think that he's a really good DFS option. Sean Livingston, I don't hate at 3,500. He's okay if you just need to throw a minimum salary guy in there. Terry and Goudlock, no such interest. At shooting guard, Jim Harden, he's at 10,800. He's going to have to play 45 minutes every night. He's going to have to score 50 points, and that should work out well for us in DFS. At only 10,800, it's a pretty good salary, I think, to use Harden at. You feel relatively confident you're going to get 50, and there's massive chances of 60s and 70s with Harden. Love it. Klay Thompson's at 7,300. Rockets bump in play here. Klay has been quiet. He's only averaging 29 across his last five. I tend to think that Klay can have a pretty decent game here. I think he's worth looking at. He's not a must play by any means, but he has value. Now, Leandro Barbosa, Brandon Rush, Ian Clark. Clark probably doesn't see the rotation. Rush possibly doesn't either. And Barbosa's not going to have enough of an impact to be really, really keen for me to use him. Small forwards. Harry Barnes is at 4,800. He's now been on Harry Barnes' back a lot, but the Rockets bump is significant for Barnes. At only 4,800, he gets to 25 points and you've got value there. I think he is one of the better, cheaper options on the board, so I do like him. Andre Iguodala, the last three times that he's played the Rockets, has averaged 29 fantasy points, which is really, really good, obviously. At 3,800, the minutes have been, he's been easing in. He's only averaging 16 points over his last three games. He has played 28 minutes there, but I imagine that he starts to do a little bit more here. Not a bad cheap option if you're looking for someone. Mick Beasley at 4,200. I don't know what to expect from Beasley. He went from big minutes to really low minutes to being, you know, replaced by Josh Smith. What they do in the playoff rotation is an interesting one. He's at 4,200, so he is someone to consider in a tournament. Because if he gets 27 minutes and goes for 20 and 9, then you're going to have tremendous value there. Trev Ariza is at 6,200. He was tremendous down the stretch. At 6,200, though, I'm just not sure I'm a massive fan, and I'm definitely not a Corey Brewer fan. Power forwards. Draymond is obviously the big name here for the Warriors. He's at 9,000. He's only averaging 34 across his last five. The matchup is fantastic, though, when you take on the Rockets. He is basically a fantasy point per minute guy, so over his last five, that is. He can have a pretty big one here. I'm not massively keen on him. I think he's a decent option, but he's not the best option that's out there. Clint Capella, if you're looking for cheap options, he's at 4,000. We've seen Dwight be limited quite a bit over the last month or so of the season. Capella's been playing, you know, well, underratedly well. He's averaging 23 points across his last three games in only 18 minutes. He's a guy that you might be able to get your 20 points, 24 points, and in a playoff matchup at $4,000 when you're just trying to sneak some value in, I do think Capella's worth it. Donatas Motiejunas is at minimum salary. He's barely getting enough minutes to even be relevant. And most Spates, I don't think, is going to be interesting. Josh Smith, no thank you. Terrence Jones, well, if we see Terrence Jones, I'll be stunned. At center, Bogey. Andrew Bogut is at 4,500. The last three times he's played the Rockets bump has been truly in effect. He's averaged 32 points. He's at 4,500. He is another cheap option that you can run out there. His last five games have yielded 21 points as is. And I think that he can play a pretty significant role here. The Rockets are not a team that they're going to have to be out. You know, we saw Bogut get benched a lot against Cleveland last season. The Rockets are not that team. They're going to run Howard out there. And if there's no Howard, they're going to run Capella or Motiejunas. So there's going to be a big man out there. And Bogut, with Azeeley still coming back and working his way back, Bogut is going to get 25-ish minutes maybe. And I think he's worth a look. Howard at 6,900. I don't like that his salary's gone back up. He hasn't really done enough for me to prove or be excited about him. He's just not doing anything really all that well at the moment. Barely shooting. It's just not happening at 6,900. No thanks. The Celtics and the Hawks. The Hawks are favored by 5. The total is 204.5 points. There's a lot to look at in this one. Dennis Schroeder is at 3,800. The last three times he's taken on the Celtics, he's averaged 25 points. That's impressive. Now, he's not a cash game option. He's more of a tournament play because we just don't know. Is he going to be 14-minute Dennis Schroeder? Is he going to be 27-minute Dennis Schroeder? Now, if Tim Hardaway Jr. is out with a hamstring problem, I think that Schroeder gets a little bit of extra run and a little bit more usage, which makes him more interesting at 3,800, and he becomes a decent tournament punt. Jeff Teague at 7,000 feels just too high for me against Boston, while Isaiah Thomas at 7,900, we know that the Hawks' defense has been really good, but opposition point guards have been able to put up pretty good numbers recently. So 7,900 for Isaiah Thomas. He's averaging 33 across his last five, which is okay. I think he can go. I think he can be a pretty important player here. So I do like Thomas at 7,900. Marcus Smart at 5,000. He's a tournament option, but definitely not one I'm excited about. Let's look at the shooting guards. Kyle Korver is down to a minimum salary. Look, he might do nothing, but we know that he can get hot and he can drop 30. He can drop 35 points and give you 9, 10x value. And that's super important, obviously, in DFS and in tournaments. So it becomes a great tournament option. Avery Bradley up to $6,000 makes me not want to be interested in using him. And Tim Hardaway, he's not going to get enough minutes to be a factor. Let's look at the small forwards. Kent Bazemore has been playing really, really well lately. He's at 5,300. I think that Bazemore at 5,300 is pretty interesting to use. I reckon he's a, and I'm not a big Bazemore fan, as you're well aware, but he is someone that you definitely can consider at that sort of salary. Thabo at 3,500. He's been good against Boston this season. He's averaging actually more points this season against Boston than what Bazemore is. But I'm not sure that I don't have much trust in him for DFS. Jay Crowder, apparently he'll be full, ready to go, full minutes, no restrictions. He's at 5,800. That salary is very appealing at 5,800. Can he get to 30 points is the question. I think he's a pretty decent chance to. So I don't mind using him. And Evan Turner is down to 5,200. So a big drop in his salary. 5,200, I actually really like Evan Turner at 5,200. I think he becomes a really cheap option. If he had stayed at that 5,800 mark, then I would have been out, but 5,200 means he needs 26 points, and I reckon that's a massive chance for him to get. The power forwards. I can't love Paul Millsap enough here. He is at 8,900, but the last three times he's played Boston, he's averaged 48 fantasy points. He's averaging 45 across his last five in general. He's had a 66-point game in his last five. The ease ranking is out, off the charts against Boston. Love Millsap here. The Celtics front court, the same problem is there. Jared Sullender's salary has risen by $1,000 here, and I don't know why, because he's averaging 17 points across his last five. He's now at 6,000, and that is as big a stay away as there is. Amir Johnson at 48. I like Amir Johnson in a tournament setting. He's averaging 26 across his last three, getting way more consistent minutes than what Sullender's been getting, and been producing a little bit more. Now, it's really tough to rely upon any of these Boston big men in a cash game setting because of the way that Stevens runs that rotation. And we don't really know how Stevens is going to run this rotation here. Is Zeller going to play? Is Jurepko going to play? Is Olynyk going to play? Like, how are they going to run it? Like, who's going to be in? Who's going to be out? Or is he just going to run the same five guys and stretch out that playoff big man rotation when there's no one really separating themselves? It will obviously know more after the first game, but I don't know. It's just it's a weird setting at the moment. The centers, same that goes for Millsap, goes for Al Horford. He's in a great spot here. He's at 7,800, 35 points. Should be an absolute lock for Al Horford in a pretty nice matchup. Kelly Olynyk at 3,800. Like I just talked about with Sullinger and Johnson, we don't know what sort of minutes he's going to get, but he could be really interesting. If he got 24 minutes a night, he's going to easily exceed 3,800. He becomes a real deep punt option, but someone that's an option nonetheless. The last game of the night is the Dallas Mavericks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 12 points. The total is 208.5. We're probably not going to have David Lee in this one with his heel pain. Devin Harris and JJ Barea are both considered probable. Let's look at the point guards. Russ Westbrook, 10,700. Love Russ at 10,700. I think that this is an easy 50 for Russ in this game. And on the other side, I love Darren Williams at 6,200. He's played big minutes the last couple of games. He's going to have to do a lot to keep Dallas competitive. We know that Westbrook hasn't been awesome defensively against opposition point guards. So I do like Darren a lot at that price. JJ Barea's salary has fallen significantly. He's down to 5,100. And that sort of keeps him in consideration. Now, it depends. Do you think that Barea is going to get 20 minutes, or is he going to get 25 to 26 minutes? It really depends on what you think there. If he gets 26 minutes, then at 5,100, he's in play. If he gets 20 minutes, then he's not really that in play. To me, he's a borderline guy. But with Justin Anderson, you know, seemingly falling from the rotation to a degree, does Barea and Felton run the two and the three spots next to Darren Williams, and they go really small? There is a possibility there, but then putting Ray Felton on Kevin Durant is probably going to not work out all that well. Speaking of Felton, he's at 4,900. I'm not all that keen on using him at that sort of salary. Let's look at shooting guard. Wes Matthews at 5,000, one of the better guys out there at 5,000. I just feel like he's going to be a solid 22 to 25 point guy. Maybe going for 30. I don't think his upside's that high. He's not a great tournament option, but for cash games, I think he's going to have to play a lot of minutes and he's going to have to do a lot. So I think he's a worthwhile guy to look at. 3,500 for Dion Waiters. I think he's a really good tournament punt option. He could be putrid, but he could have a game where he drops 25 or 26, and that's really keen. Well, not really keen. That's really key in setting a good DFS lineup. Andre Robertson's a non-factor. So is Randy Foy and Anthony Morrow. Let's look at the small forwards. Kevin Durant, 10,600. I love using KD if you can fit it in. He's in a really good spot here. Who's going to stop him on this team? That's what I look at, and who is going to be able to stop Durant? If he doesn't get 50, I'm going to be stunned. Justin Anderson, he was playing really well until the last game, but when Dallas had to win to clinch a playoff spot against Utah, and he played 14 minutes. So that's a concern to me, was how Carlisle has been notoriously sort of anti-rookie for most of his career. How's he going to trust Anderson in the playoffs? Is he going to give him 28 minutes? Is he going to give him 20 minutes? Is he going to give him 15 minutes? We don't know at this point. Really tough to rely on. Cole Singler and Josh Huestis, well, I'm pretty sure we know where I stand on those guys. Dirk's at 7,200, and Dirk's going to have to play well. 7,200's a lot of money to spend on him, and the salary's risen, but I still think he's a pretty good option to use here because they're just going to have to run so much through Dirk, and we know he's got some big games left in him. Serge Ibaka at 5,800, yeah, obviously hasn't been his season. He's been really, really terrible for a lot of the season, from a fantasy point of view anyway. At 5,800, I think that you have to consider using him, and I think he is a pretty decent guy to look at. The rest of the power forwards here, Charlie Villanueva, who might get some minutes with David Lee out. It's not going to impact fantasy though. Nick Collison, Mitch McGarry, ditto. I love Enes Kanter here. He's at 4,500. His salary's dropped by 1,100. 4,500, it means you get 25 points out of Enes Kanter, and it's easy 5x. He is a guy that I think is going to have to play a pretty big role. Who's going to stop him for Dallas? Zaza Pachulia, Salah Mejri. Who's going to be able to keep this guy off the boards and keep him from scoring down low? I love Enes here. Zaza's at 4,000. I think Zaza is actually at 4,000. He's not a bad guy to look at because he's been getting the bulk of the minutes at center. He was really awesome to start the season, and hopefully this was just literally a maintenance period for the last 2 months, and they're going to run him back out there decent minutes. So I do like Pachulia a lot at 4,000. Steve Adams at 45, I don't mind as well. So I think there's a lot of value at center in this matchup with Kanter, Pachulia, and Adams all being worthwhile options. Let's have a look at the DFS picks of the day now. At point guard, Pat Beverley, 5,000. Darren Williams, 6,200. And Russ Westbrook, 10,700. Shooting guards, Kyle Korver, 35. Wes Matthews, 5,000. And Jim Harden, 10,800. Small forwards, Harry Barnes, 48. Kent Bazemore, 53. And Kev Durant, 10,600. For the power forwards, Clint Capela, 4,000. Dirk Nowitzki, 72. And Paulie Millsap, 89. And the centers, Enes Kanter, 45. Jonas Valanciunas, 6,000. And Al Horford, 7,800. All right, good luck if your team is in the playoffs. Good luck with your DFS lineups. Hopefully you guys did well in your season-long leagues. Make sure you're checking out basketballmonster.com, subscribing for our playoff DFS package, which is just $14.99, and hopefully you can win some money throughout the playoffs. Enjoy the NBA. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and on YouTube. Leave a review if you have the time. Check out our sponsors, Loot Crate and lootcrate.com/redrock. It would be awesome if you could do that. We are done for today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.